Yes, sir. Though with great respect, you're dead wrong, Jack replied. But let's address that later. First, I want Caroline safe. I'd like you to listen to everything I've heard about Lord Bremerton. Jack stood his ground as the older man deliberated Jack's request. You accept defeat well, Caroline's father finally said. I suppose I can listen. Sit. He sat in a brown leather wing chair, and Jack took the one opposite him. And as he told Caroline's father all that he knew, Jack didn't share one essential truth about himself. He didn't believe in defeat at all. Caroline sniffled. The carriage Bremerton had sent to the train station smelled of mildew and had been bothering her nose. At least her discomfort suited the wet day and served as a counterbalance to her mother's relentless cheerfulness. As they approached Chesley House, it was safe to say that Mama's heart problem had miraculously cured itself.
Well, it certainly is a large enough place to keep you busy, Caroline's mother said, as the country house grew from a distant dot on the landscape to a looming presence.
The long three-story building was a drab sight. Its gray stone blended into an equally gray sky, and the reflecting pond in front of the structure only amplified the effect.
Lord Bremerton has done well for himself, Mama said, continuing the same one-sided conversation she'd had going since she, Annie, Berta, and Caroline had boarded the train this morning. Caroline shook her head.
The house as well as the title are on loan from his grandfather. He owns neither.
Please at least try to be cheerful, Mama instructed as they bounced along on a gravel road in need of attention.
This is my new cheerful, Caroline replied. You didn't let me wait long enough to see Papa, and you didn't bring Peek. So all things considered, I'm quite sunny.
I can hardly help it if the Vandermeulen's yacht is slow, and you know that Peek was needed to watch over the girls in the city. We could hardly ask them to leave when it's not even August and anyone of import remains there.
Caroline wouldn't have wished her sisters here, especially not Amelia, who had finally realized that not only was Bremerton not the romantic figure she had made him out to be, he wasn't even particularly nice to her. It was better that both girls stayed in the city, and perhaps even ran a little wild while Mama was elsewhere. The July timing was convenient for Bremerton, too. There would be little to do but sit on this moldering property and look at each other.
I had no idea you had become so close to Peek that a mere week without her would put you in this mood, Mama said. She is quite devoted. I will keep her on for Helen and Amelia.
Fondness hadn't driven Caroline's desire to have Peek along with them. Necessity had. Peek knew people locally and could have been instrumental in finding out about Bremerton's supposed French wife. Now Caroline was on her own, and time, as well as the Englishman, had become her enemy.
All I ask is that you not hover now that we're here, Mama, Caroline said.
If she had only Annie for help, she needed room to maneuver.
You've gotten what you wanted. Now please give me the freedom to adjust to my new life.
Of course, her mother said, and then pointed out the window. Oh, look at that lovely little folly of a ruined thatched cottage. Isn't this the most romantic landscape?
Caroline sighed. The cottage her mother was admiring was no landscape accent, but the real thing, and still occupied, too. Mama was so in love with the notion of England that she painted everything in rosy hues. The carriage jolted to a stop, and a young man who'd been standing at the front of the house came forward to help Caroline and her mother. At least the rain had stopped pelting down. Caroline shook out her blue travel cloak and skirts once she reached the gritty limestone gravel drive. The boy led them up the house's three broad steps, which were in need of a good sweeping, and held the door open for them. Neither Bremerton nor a servant waited in the cavernous entry hall, a space dominated by a large, curving stairway that must have been quite impressive in its day. Now it looked suspect, as did the hall. Its plaster walls were discolored, and while a few small oil paintings still hung, more notable were the dust outlines where larger pieces had once been.
You'll have such fun decorating this place, Mama enthused.
If Caroline were the sort of person Mama was, and took actual joy out of gathering up as many of the world's treasures as she could to use as props, that might have been true.
Caroline preferred to see things in their natural surroundings, where context made them all the more understandable. And these surroundings certainly confirmed her beliefs about Bremerton. He appeared on the upper hallway. Caroline suppressed a shiver that came from both the house's chill and her own nerves. It was as though thinking his name had summoned the devil.
"Welcome," he said as he started down the stairs. "I wish we would have had a better day. Chesley House shows poorly in the rain."
His deep voice echoed against the bare walls.
"It's a lovely property with great potential," Mama said.
Caroline kept her silence as Bremerton made the ground floor. He wore country tweeds that, although the fit was perfect, didn't suit him at all. He was playing yet another role, and this one less convincingly than his city persona.
"That's kind of you to say, Mrs. Maxwell. There's much that requires attention here," he replied.
As he did, he watched Caroline in a way that made her immediately decide that Annie would be sleeping in her room with her.
"Your maids and trunks should be along shortly," he said. "In the meantime, my housekeeper should be here to show you to your rooms. We'll be having dinner with two of my neighbors and with Lady Carew, my great-aunt on my mother's side, who acts as hostess here at Chesley House since I am yet unmarried."
"I look forward to meeting your great-aunt," Caroline said. "I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about since she's known you from childhood."
"I'm sure you will," Bremerton replied smoothly.
And even if Mama had been paying closer attention, she probably wouldn't have caught the flash of cold warning in the Englishman's eyes. She was already convinced that he represented perfection. The housekeeper, a harried-looking woman somewhere in her middle years, arrived.
"Mrs. Parker, if you would please show our guests to their rooms," Bremerton said.
To Caroline and her mother, he added,
"I'll give you time to settle in. We'll meet in the dining room at 8.
"Right this way," Mrs. Parker said, leading them to the stairway. "As you'll see, we have neither gas nor electric on anything but the main floor. Lord Bremerton says the stone walls are much too thick to accommodate such conveniences. There are candles and oil lamps in your rooms to help you get about in the night."
"It's all so very romantic," Mama said.
She clearly had not thought through the stone situation far enough to understand this meant that in the winter, the upstairs rooms were heated only by fireplaces. Caroline would hold out hope for plumbing. Mrs. Parker stopped at a door and swung it open.
"Miss Maxwell, this will be your room."
Caroline stepped inside. Mama and the housekeeper followed. The room was large and had clearly once been very elegant. Now it possessed that same aura of slow decay as the rest of the house. The rosewood dresser was new, but had nothing in common with a four-poster bed that was at least 100 years older, or with the small sofa in front of the fireplace that looked as though it had been upholstered with a local cow. The green draperies hung listlessly, and the rug was worn down to its backing in spots. And this was likely the best of the guest rooms, which Caroline would have been accorded as Lord Bremerton's future fiancé. At least, though, it had a chaise on which Annie could sleep, and it was clean.
"Thank you," she said to the housekeeper. "It will do quite nicely."
She turned to Mama, who had picked up a chipped China shepherdess figurine and turned it upside down to look for its maker.
"No need to linger, Mama. I'll see you at dinner."
As soon as the two other women had departed, Caroline closed the door and began pacing the room. There was work to be done to get her into Jack's arms, and she was ready to begin. Jack usually loved Mondays. They were the start of a new work week and rich with potential. This Monday, however, had been rich with something else entirely. He'd taken enough of a hit from Bernard Maxwell that he figured he might as well just keep going and deal with the mess of politely explaining to Harriet that there would be no marriage proposal. It was his fault for not having done it sooner, but he hadn't wrapped his mind around the girl's unbelievable tenacity. She'd crossed the ocean with not even a shred of the encouragement that had sent Agnes Maxwell into a frenzy of packing. Jack had learned from Mr. Maxwell that the Vandermeulens had also taken suites at the Savoy. If nothing else, that made Jack's wrap-up of the worst Monday on record efficient. He'd had a note delivered to Harriet's rooms, asking her to join him on the terrace at 6. She approached now, dressed in a lavender gown with more fluff and lace than Jack had ever seen.
Her hat was no shirker when it came to ornamentation either. He spotted three small stuffed birds among the silk leaves and would bet that a couple more were hiding in there somewhere.
"Hello, Jack," she said. "How wonderful that you're in London. I had no idea you'd be here."
Harriet was an unskilled fibber. Her voice wavered and her eyes darted.
"I thought we could take a walk in the Embankment Gardens now that the rain has stopped," Jack said. "But it's still wet. How about if we have a seat at one of these tables?"
"Do you like to walk?" Harriet asked.
"It gets me from place to place," he said with a smile.
"If you like it, then we shall walk," she replied. "It's most healthful."
She gripped her skirts and raised them until he could see the pointy toes of her white kid boots.
"Shall we?"
They walked down the outer stairway toward the garden. Harriet stopped at the puddle stretching across the expanse of ground at the stair's base, stubbornly set her jaw, and marched over it. Jack would have offered once again to turn back, but he got the sense that once Harriet was set on a course of action, she was going to see it through to the end.
"As you know, your father approached me some weeks ago and suggested that marriage to you was an option I should consider," Jack said as they passed beneath an oak tree.
Harriet stopped.
"Yes, I am aware of that."
"I was honored," Jack said, stopping too. "You're a beautiful young woman from a fine family."
Harriet looked up at him. He'd expected to see some sort of feminine softness in her eyes. Instead, he saw the fierce spark that came with the thought of impending victory. He was damn sure he looked the same way every time he bought another brewery.
"Thank you," she replied in a sweet voice.
"And as much as I was honored, I determined not to follow through on your father's suggestion."
"Well, that's not true. We've danced together and had meals together," she said.
A breeze pushed through the oak tree, sending the droplets of rain that had clung to its leaves down in a miniature shower. Harriet glared up at the tree.
"Shall we move on to stand by the river?" Jack asked.
"No," she replied angrily. "We'll stay here. Are you denying that we danced together?"
"No, but you danced with a great many men and spoke with them at your picnic, too. I was just part of your legion of admirers."
"Yes, well, you're the admirer I've chosen," she said.
"The choice has to be mutual, Harriet," he said in a firm but kind voice. "And I've fallen in love with someone else."
"Love? What does love have to do with marriage for people such as us?"
He smiled.
"You sound exactly like I did, and not all that long ago. I looked at marriage as I did any other business transaction."
"Well, naturally," she said.
"Someone has proven to me that I was wrong. And I'm betting that when you least expect it, some man is going to come along and do the same for you."
Harriet made an annoyed little sound.
"That's nonsense, and you've put quite a knot in my plans. I have every intention of being married this winter."
She walked to the water's edge, and Jack followed. A small sailboat slowly worked its way toward them, its sails just catching the scant breeze. Harriet glared at the boat, too, though Jack got the feeling it was really intended for him.
"If marriage is your intention, I'm sure you'll succeed," he said.
She looked at him.
"You're here in London, and you came with the Maxwells, which means you're in love with Caroline."
He nodded.
"I am."
"But you can't be in love with her. She's supposed to marry Lord Bremerton. You're supposed to love me. Think how much more convenient that would be."
"I'm new to this love thing, but even I can guarantee it has nothing to do with convenience."
"And yet you're in love."
She shook her head.
"You're not who I thought you'd be."
Jack smiled.
"I'm not who I thought I'd be either."
But he liked this new man a whole lot more. Caroline and Mama weren't overdressed for dinner so much as they were too newly dressed. As the small party sat gathered around the dining table, which had an unfortunate slope toward Caroline, she assessed the state of their wardrobes. Lady Carew wore a gray silk gown with an enormous bustle that had been the height of fashion 20 years ago, but no longer. The two women from the neighboring family, Miss Daisy Ridley and her widowed mother, Mrs. Olive Ridley, were dressed in more recent clothing, but Caroline still felt too glittery and new by comparison. Even Bremerton's evening clothes were more subdued than his city wear. Mama, of course, didn't seem to notice. She and Bremerton talked on about ways in which the house could be improved and who their favorite architects were. From time to time, Bremerton would glance Caroline's way, but it seemed that since he believed Victory and her funds were his, there was no need to feign interest in her in front of the others. Caroline was fine with that.
"This is all highly irregular," Lady Carew announced in a loud, quivering voice from her seat at Bremerton's right.
His great-aunt was quite elderly, and, Caroline feared, no longer fully in possession of her faculties.
"What, auntie?" Bremerton stopped to ask.
"I do not understand why we have these foreigners at my table. They are from America, you say?"
"Yes," Bremerton replied.
"It's a land of heathens and savages. They all live in mud huts."
Caroline looked downward to hide a smile, but Mama was puffing up like an adder. Bremerton motioned to the waiter, who was the same boy who'd opened the front door for them earlier.
"My aunt would like some more wine."
"It sounds as though you and Lord Bremerton are to marry," Miss Daisy Ridley said to Caroline. Daisy was close to Caroline's age and possessed of a ruddy glow that Caroline saw most often on her centaur female friends, those who would sooner die than be parted from their horses.
"There are no plans at this point," Caroline replied.
"You are not the first American girl to come to the county," Daisy said. "I simply don't understand it, though. Why would you possibly want to move so far away from both your mother and your home? And why would your mother want you to?"
Since Caroline was plagued by precisely the same questions, it was difficult to come up with an answer that wouldn't make her mother look like an ogre, or she like the family member that must be shed at all costs.
"It's complicated," Caroline said.
"Nothing in this world is so complicated that it can't be broken down, just like my horse's tack," Daisy replied. "And you seem to have your wits about you more than the other Americans I've met. Break it down for me."
Caroline drew in a breath and was ready to give it a try, but Lady Carew interrupted.
"You," she cried, pointing a finger at Caroline. "You in the yellow with all the jewels."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Why are you here?"
she asked, her roomy eyes narrow.
"Your nephew invited me," Caroline replied.
"Miss Maxwell has come to Chesley House to decide if the house and I suit her," Bremerton said to his aunt.
"Whatever for?"
"The general intention is that we should wed."
"Wed?" his great-aunt asked. "What did you do with the last one?"
"What last one, auntie?"
"Why, your wife, of course. I saw her scurrying around here from room to room."
She pointed at the waiter.
"Go find her now. We cannot be served until she is at the table, too. And who seated me in the wrong place? I am to be to your left, Marcus. Your wife is to be at your right."
Daisy moved closer. "Disregard her," she said in a low voice. "She has declined greatly since Lord Bremerton and she arrived. It's quite sad."
Caroline nodded. "I understand."
But she also understood that Lady Carew, while old, wasn't necessarily mad.
"Are you going to reseat me?"
Lady Carew demanded. She pointed at Mama.
"Make her move."
Mama's jaw had gone slack. Caroline couldn't recall ever seeing her this shocked.
"Perhaps dinner in your room would suit you, auntie," Bremerton suggested.
"Yes, and tell me when you're rid of the foreigners."
She glared at Mama.
"This is all most irregular, bringing round this odd lot."
Bremerton rose and motioned to the waiter.
"We shall escort you to your room," he said to his great-aunt.
Caroline couldn't wait until she was back to hers, either. 2 hours later, the jewels were off, the dress rehung, and Caroline sat in her dressing gown on the edge of her bed, running a brush through her hair. Annie was in her nightclothes, having snuck away from her room next to Berta's to keep watch for Bremerton.
"I will never complain about my lodgings in any of your houses again," Annie said.
Caroline had never actually seen the servants' quarters in either house.
"Why, are your rooms back home not satisfactory?"
Annie laughed.
"Well, I have my own room, even if it fits no more than a cot and an old wardrobe. That's better than what I had with my family. But here? She shuddered. I opened my door and a rat ran out. I would have sent someone after it, but the thing looked like it was ready to starve to death on its own. I'm telling you, there are parts of this house no one has touched in years, and as for the rest, the devil can have it.
Caroline slipped off the bed and put her brush next to her mirror on the nightstand. The candle there flickered with the breeze she'd made.
I've noticed they're running even thinner on servants than the situation Peake described.
Annie nodded.
There's Mrs. Parker, the housekeeper, Charlie, the waiter and footman, and I think Gardner, too. Then there's Cora, the only maid, and her husband, who's both coachman and groom, and a cook. Small wonder no one can keep up.
Who has been here the longest?
Only Cora and her husband were here when the last Lord Bremerton was alive. Charlie's new and not nearly so fun to tease as Jack O'Toole.
Annie sighed.
A week here is punishment.
A knock sounded at the bedroom door. Caroline held her finger to her lips.
Is that you, Mama? Caroline called.
No one answered for a moment, but then Bremerton identified himself and asked if he might step in. Caroline walked to the door and put her hand against it.
That would be very improper, she said through its hard surface.
Culhane has seen you in less.
Caroline winced at the reference. From behind her, she heard a hiss. Annie had risen and was ready to spring. Caroline shook her head and mouthed the word no.
I am asking if you would please stay on your side of the door, Caroline recited like a schoolgirl saying her verses.
For now, I will allow that, Bremerton replied. Tomorrow I am hunting in the morning. You and your mother may occupy yourselves here. Don't disturb my aunt. As you've now seen, she's not well.
We will do as you wish.
And Caroline?
Yes?
Tell your maid to go back to her room. We sleep with neither Irishmen nor servants.
Chapter 22 Caroline made certain that Bremerton was off slaying birds before she went to breakfast the next day. Wearing her simplest morning dress, she walked to the dining room. Though it wasn't even 8, the table had been cleared of all settings. She stood there feeling lost until Cora, the sole maid, came in, dusting rag in hand. The tall and slender woman, who looked to be a handful of years older than Caroline, quickly cleaned but showed no apparent interest in finishing any one task.
I was wondering if it would be possible to get breakfast, Caroline asked.
The maid jumped like a nervous cat.
I'm sorry, but that would be up to Mrs. Parker.
Is Mrs. Parker available?
She stepped out of the house.
The information had been given hesitantly. Caroline decided to put the maid at ease.
My name is Caroline Maxwell, and I believe you're Cora?
Yes, miss.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Cora.
Thank you, miss.
So I am to wait until Mrs. Parker returns?
Yes, if you care to try to have breakfast,
Cora said as she picked up one dented candlestick from the buffet and wiped beneath it, but then cleaned around its mate.
But the master's rule is that once a master has eaten, the meal is over.
I see,
Caroline replied over her grumbling stomach.
Thank you, Cora.
Yes, miss. Is there anything else I may do for you?
Nothing at all, thank you.
Caroline made her way from the dining room to the stairs and was about to go up when Mama came rushing down. She was dressed in her dark blue travel garb, and to Caroline's knowledge, no travel was planned.
Where were you for breakfast? Mama asked.
I was still in my room.
You'd better hurry tomorrow. The meal was over and done with before my tea could steep.
Her mother kept looking up the stairway as she spoke, and she seemed as skittish as Cora had, too.
Where are you going? Caroline asked.
How did you know I was going someplace?
Your clothing.
Oh, yes, of course. London.
Caroline's relief was infinite.
Thank heaven. Give us 10 minutes and Annie will have us packed.
No need. You're staying here.
Mama pulled a telegram from her small purse.
Your father has instructed me to return to London at once.
She handed Caroline the paper.
As you see, it's addressed to me alone, and it says only return London now. There's no mention of bringing you.
Caroline handed the telegram back.
You know he meant me too, even if he didn't spell it out, she said.
Papa was always ridiculously frugal when writing a telegram. It was as though he guarded the family fortune one word at a time. Mama returned the message to her purse and then gave Caroline a sharp look.
Have you accepted Bremerton's proposal?
Now she understood her mother's game.
No.
Then it's not time for you to leave. I hope to persuade your father to return here with me tomorrow so he can witness your engagement. Lord Bremerton thought it was a fine idea.
Of course he did, because that meant Caroline would be alone tonight. Mama, you can't just leave me here without a chaperone.
You have Annie, her mother said. Caroline was speechless for an instant.
You wouldn't even trust her to go to Harriet's picnic with me, and yet you'd leave us here alone?
You'll be fine, Mama replied. Even you can't find much trouble here in the middle of nothing. And if you're looking for a titular chaperone, there's Lady Carew. Your reputation is safe.
Berta teetered down the stairs, carrying Mama's smallest travel trunk.
To the carriage, Berta,
Mama commanded before coming to Caroline and taking her hands.
You're 21 years old. I was married and had you at that age. Surely you're independent enough to spend less than 2 days on your own.
If Caroline had been any place but there, she'd have been popping champagne corks and celebrating her freedom. But tonight, she'd be turning the lock on her bedroom door.
Travel safely, Mama.
4 hours later, Bremerton was still harassing birds. No lunch was to be served until he was done. Annie had even gone to the kitchen to ask for bread and cheese, but with no success. Now she was off trying to sweet-talk Charlie into asking for her. Caroline was in her bedroom contemplating the healthful aspects of fasting when Cora appeared in the doorway and asked permission to clean. Caroline put thoughts of hunger away. She sat at the dressing table and pretended to sort through her jewelry. Really, she watched Cora through the mirror. At first, Cora darted glances in her direction, but eventually she began to clean, and with more thoroughness than she'd shown downstairs, too. Caroline decided it was time to speak.
"Would you mind if I asked you a question?"
"No, miss," Cora replied without looking her way.
"Last night, Lady Carew said something at dinner about Lord Bremerton having a wife."
"Lady Carew is often confused."
"Yes, but I don't think she's confused about this. And I do wish that you'd sit and talk to me."
"I can't sit, miss."
"Would you at least take a moment from your work? I'm alone here except for Annie, and both of us see that things aren't normal in this house."
"You've got the right of that," the maid said under her breath.
"I promise this isn't just a visitor's curiosity. Lord Bremerton has proposed marriage. I feel I have a right to know about him and his past, even if he refuses to tell me."
Caroline stood and walked to Cora.
"You're married, aren't you?"
"Yes."
"And you love each other?"
She nodded.
"Very much, miss. My Jamie and I ran off, even though we knew I'd lose my job for having done so. Maids cannot be married. But the last Lord Bremerton's wife, she told the housekeeper not to let me go. Lady Beth was a kind woman. We all hated seeing her leave Chesley House after Lord Percival died."
Her mouth worked for a moment as though she was trying to hold something in.
"And I don't like following the orders Lord Bremerton gave about you. It's not right not feeding you. I could hardly work while telling you that."
"Thank you," Caroline replied. "I'd guess that not feeding me isn't the only strange thing you've seen around here."
Cora's expression grew darker for a moment.
"I've seen plenty."
"A friend of mine heard whispers that Lord Bremerton might have had a wife," Caroline said. "Having loved and lost someone isn't usually the stuff of rumors. I'm sure you can see why I'm worried."
"I want to help you," Cora said in a rush. "I'll do, but this is the only job I'll be getting unless Jamie and I part."
She shook her head.
"I can't do it, miss."
If Caroline had had a house of her own, she would have offered the couple employment. But she didn't and wouldn't before they starved. But she did have something. Caroline returned to the dressing table. Papa had said that a woman's jewels were insurance against many things in life. Hers might be insurance against marriage. She selected a heavy gold brooch set with diamonds and rubies and brought it to Cora.
"I want you to have this," she said. "It's your assurance that if you choose to leave here, you and Jamie can start a new life."
The maid shook her head.
"I can't be taking that. I'll be accused of theft."
"I'll write a letter of gift," Caroline said. "Please. All I want is to have the same freedom given to you. I want to marry for love."
She held out the pin again.
This time Cora hesitantly took it. She held it cupped in her hand and looked at it for a moment, then sighed as she handed it back.
I can't do it, miss, but I'll tell you what I know about Lord Bremerton's late wife, and that will be my gift to you.
Caroline felt nearly weak with relief.
Thank you.
Cora knotted her hands together and began speaking.
When Lord Bremerton took over the house, he came straight from France and brought with him a wife. She was French and spoke not more than a few words of English, but she was very beautiful and full of smiles for the first day she was here. Then something happened. I don't know what, but her smiles were gone, and she spent most of her time avoiding the master.
I don't suppose that's surprising, considering his nature.
No, it's not, Caroline agreed.
Not more than a week later, Lord Bremerton told Jamie to saddle a horse for his wife. They were going to explore the countryside. Jamie chose a mare he knew was safe, but Lord Bremerton said his wife needed a mount with spirit to match hers. He insisted on a filly that was oddly saddle-broken.
Cora gave an angry shake of her head.
The master said the horse bolted and his wife died. He called it a most tragic accident. I called it near close to murder. I always think about how horrible it must have been for her, in a land where she couldn't speak the language, had no friends, and then died not a fortnight later.
What was her name?
Adele.
Is Adele buried in the village churchyard?
Caroline sought proof of events that even her doubting mother would accept. But more than that, she wanted to feel as though Adele had found peace.
No, Cora replied. His lordship said he wished to return to her family. I'd like to believe he did that, but I can't. He's not a kind man.
Caroline had nothing to say for that, now knowing she'd received only a negligible dose of his unkindness.
Did his wife meet any of the neighbors?
No, the maid said. His lordship was in mourning for his brother, so they didn't socialize.
Lady Carew had to be here at least.
She wasn't here either. She didn't come until after Lord Bremerton was alone.
So she couldn't have known Adele then, Caroline said to herself.
I think Lady Carew sees things the rest of us don't, miss, and I think those things are real.
If that were the case, Caroline wished she could see Bremerton's wife too. She wanted to know what truly happened.
Where did Adele spend her time?
Mostly she'd be in the East Wing's library, or out walking the grounds. It was all so very sad.
Thank you for telling me about this, Caroline said.
You've a right to know, Cora replied. And Jamie and I are the last here who can tell the tale.
Caroline held out the brooch again.
Please, take it.
Cora deliberated for a moment, then accepted it.
Thank you. You've changed our lives.
Caroline smiled.
And you might just have saved mine.
Jack wasn't sure what he was doing in the Maxwell parlor at 3 on Tuesday afternoon, and he hadn't been impressed by Bernard Maxwell's terse summons, but he was there, just the same.
I owe you an apology, Caroline's father said as he walked in the parlor door.
This was the first time Jack had seen Maxwell looking worn down. Jack didn't like it.
You were right about Bremerton, the older man said.
He pointed to the wing chairs where they'd sat yesterday.
Have a seat. I'll stand, thank you, Jack replied. What have you heard? Enough that I immediately sent word to Agnes to get back here. I expect them soon.
Maxwell shook his head.
I can't believe how damned hard it was to get in to see Hensley. At home, people come to me.
He tapped his chest.
Presidents come to me. The old man's staff made me sit in a long hallway for over an hour before I was allowed an audience. All that time, the dead Dukes of Hensley were staring down at me. Even the damn paintings had a superior attitude. It's not such a rare thing, Jack said, deciding to take that seat after all. We're not like these people, Jack.
He smiled.
And yesterday you were telling me that I wasn't like you.
Whatever Maxwell had planned to say in return was lost in the commotion of Agnes Maxwell rushing into the room. She pulled up short when she spotted Jack.
What is he doing here?
She asked her husband while she unbuttoned her blue cape, shrugged it off, and handed it to a waiting footman.
He's my guest, Bernard replied. Where's Caroline?
Still at Chesley House.
Bernard shot from his seat.
What?
But only for a very short time, she added. Her voice quavered in the face of her husband's anger. I am hoping you'll return with me on the morning train. Caroline won't accept the proposal without you there.
She won't be accepting the proposal at all, Bernard replied.
Agnes stiffened.
How can you say that after all of my work?
Not another word, her husband said.
She closed her mouth. Bernard looked at Jack.
Ensley told me a few tales from Bremerton's early youth that make me believe he not only harmed Edward, but has done worse. And since Bremerton stepped in line to inherit, his grandfather has learned more. Not only does Bremerton gamble money he doesn't have, but he's being blackmailed. The Duke has no proof, but he suspects the blackmail has to do with the death of his grandson, Percy, as well as the death of Bremerton's first wife, Adele. The Duke would rather see the title extinguished than eventually go to Bremerton, but he can't control that.
I should never have left Caroline there, not even for a short while, Agnes said. I don't know what I was thinking.
Maxwell turned back to his wife.
Neither do I. There will be much more discussion about who and how my daughters may marry from now on.
She nodded.
Where exactly is Caroline? Jack asked her.
At Chesley House, outside the village of Arundel, southwest of here.
We need Caroline out of there tonight, Agnes's husband said.
But there's no train service past Petworth until morning. I checked at the station before coming home, Agnes replied.
Jack rose.
If you'll excuse me,
he said to the Maxwells.
Where are you going, son? Bernard asked.
To Chesley House.
Chapter 23. What would a woman who spoke only French want in an English library? Caroline closed the door behind herself, pulled open the dusty gold curtains to let in the afternoon summer sun, and began trying to answer that question. She sat behind the mahogany desk and started pulling open drawers. Other than a few worn pen nibs and the odd scrap of paper, the desk had been cleaned out. She moved on to the bookshelves. Someone many years ago had loved botany. A third of one wall was filled with old texts. If Adele had read Latin, she would have been in heaven. However, in Caroline's circles, Latin-reading women were fairly scarce, and given Bremerton's need to control, she doubted he would have wed a woman more intelligent than he. She laughed to herself when she realized what she'd just thought. Of course he would marry a bookish heiress. She was proof of that. Caroline pulled a volume at random. It had been shelved for so long that its top was thick with dust. Holding in a sneeze, she replaced it and tipped out a few others to see if they, too, were long unread. Satisfied that botany and Latin hadn't been Adele's lures, Caroline moved on. She'd nearly decided that the Frenchwoman had merely chosen the library for its out-of-the-way location when she came upon a small foreign language section. Yes, she murmured to herself as she ran her fingers along the works of the philosopher Descartes, translated from their original Latin to French. Whatever the language, they remained heavy reading. Smiling Adele would have fancied something lighter. Caroline smiled, too, when she saw a copy of Les Trois Mousquetaires. Trying to think like Adele, she pulled the book from the shelf, dragged the desk chair into the sunlight, and began to read. She'd just gotten to D'Artagnan's first skirmish with the Comte de Rochefort when Annie shot into the room.
Here you are. You'd better hurry, or dinner is going to pass you by, too. Bremerton is gobbling his food just to be sure you go hungry.
Caroline closed the book. Hesitant to leave a good story behind, she brought it along to the dining room. Bremerton looked up from his plate as she entered. All she could think was, so this is what a murderer might look like. One would never know. She decided to be as she always had been with him, somewhat south of polite. If she started fawning now, he would suspect something was awry.
I didn't know we were to dine early, she said to the Englishman as she slipped into her seat and set her book on the table. Then again, you didn't tell me.
What is that you're reading? Bremerton asked.
Alexandre Dumas, she said. The Three Musketeers.
In French?
Well, yes, she replied.
You speak French?
Yes, and German. And I read Latin and some Greek besides.
He made a disinterested sound. Caroline nipped into her chicken while she could. Nerves had only increased her appetite. This was plain food, but after a day of going without, it tasted like ambrosia.
"We'll be taking a ride tomorrow," Bremerton said. "I thought you might like to see the countryside and perhaps visit with the Bentons before your mother and father arrive."
"I don't think so."
"What?"
"Let me put that in British terms. I wish to never ride with you."
His look of surprise quickly faded.
"Your choice. Stay here, then."
"I will," she said, before eating 5 green beans in quick succession.
Bremerton set down his fork. Charlie stepped forward and cleared the plate. He looked Caroline's way before turning and walking at a snail's pace toward a tray he'd placed on the buffet. Caroline was grateful for the brief reprieve. She bolted as much of her food as she could before Charlie returned and pulled her plate. Bremerton, who had been watching her, said,
"After that show, I'm sure you don't wish for dessert."
"I couldn't eat another bite," she lied cheerfully. "In fact, if you'll excuse me, I believe I'll retire to my room and read for the evening."
"Of course. I'll be by to check on your welfare later."
"That's quite unnecessary," Caroline said as she rose and reclaimed her book from the table.
"But it will happen all the same," Bremerton said.
Caroline left the dining room and found Annie waiting for her in the hallway.
"Did you get any food in?" Annie asked.
Caroline smiled.
"An impressive amount. Thank you for the warning."
They climbed the stairs, and once they were back in the bedroom, Caroline took a look at the cowhide couch and decided to forego sitting on that in favor of reading in bed. Annie settled onto the chaise with a piece of lace she was tatting. She said it was going to be for her wedding dress one day if she was ever mad enough to marry. If all marriages turned out like poor dead Adele's, it would be madness. But Caroline still held out hope for Jack and true love. The light in the room was growing dimmer. Caroline set aside her book to turn up the flame on the oil lamp she'd moved bedside. When she picked up the thick book, a folded piece of ivory-colored paper slipped out of the back pages.
"What have we here?" she said.
Annie looked up from her lace.
"It looks like a piece of paper to me."
Caroline unfolded the paper. She drew in an excited breath as she realized that the slightly crooked writing on the stationery was in French. Adele had been writing a friend named Dominique.
"Oh, no," she said as she read Adele's confession that she had lied to Bremerton about being an heiress. "What is it?" Annie asked.
Caroline scanned the rest of the letter, which had never been completed.
"This was written by Bremerton's late wife. She'd lied to him about her wealth. When they arrived at Chesley House, she realized he was in financial straits and had likely married her for her money. She had just confessed to Bremerton when she'd written this. He had become enraged. She was hoping he'd come to love her and forgive her. She felt terrible about her deceit." "He killed her, didn't he?" Annie asked after a stretch of silence.
Caroline hadn't had time to share with Annie what she'd learned from Cora, so she quickly updated her.
"Money and pride are the two most important things in Bremerton's life. Adele struck at both of those," Caroline added. "And if he didn't kill her, why would he be trying to hide both her life and her death?"
Caroline could feel Adele's lingering presence so vividly that she understood how Lady Carew might see her. And Caroline felt danger, too. She set aside the letter and rose from the bed.
"Is the colt that Eddie gave me still hidden in the trunk below my corsets?" "I didn't move it," Annie said. "That thing scares me."
Caroline went to her trunk and carefully uncovered the revolver. It was nearly identical to the Colt single-action army her mother had confiscated, only this time Eddie had bought her one with a shorter barrel that he teased her by saying made for a more ladylike weapon. So long as it still shot bullets, it could be as ladylike as it wished. Caroline took those, too, from the trunk. She carefully loaded each chamber and set the hammer in the safety notch. Then she went to her dressing table and dumped all the jewelry from its case, placed the gun inside, and closed the top.
"Is that this season's new accessory?" Annie asked. "The most useful yet."
Caroline sorted through the jumble of jewels on the tabletop and selected a sapphire necklace.
"This can serve a few purposes, too."
She held it up for Annie to take.
"We're leaving tonight. I want you to go to the nearest house and bargain for the use of a horse and any type of cart. It doesn't matter what, so long as it can get us to Arendelle. We can't trust that we'll be able to get a horse from here."
Annie shook her head.
I don't want to leave you here.
And I don't want both of us to be trapped here, Caroline said. She waggled the necklace.
Take this and get moving.
Annie did, but not without a worried backward glance.
Don't worry, Caroline said. I'll do this as safely as I can.
It had all sounded so simple, Jack thought. Take a train to Petworth, find a horse, and ride like the wind to Chesley House. Except the train to Petworth had stopped in every village along its tracks, plus once for sheep across them. He had willed himself to be calm. From Bremerton's perspective, everything was going just as he'd planned. He had his heiress, and he was training her to be biddable. So long as those two facts did not change, Caroline was safe. Even after Jack had made Petworth, the only horse he'd found was more about passing wind than letting him ride like it. It had been 10 and more miles of hard, slow road, but he'd reached Arundel's outskirts before sundown.
"Excuse me," he said to a cluster of men lingering outside a pub. "I'm looking for Chesley House. Can you tell me where to find it?"
"Chesley House," said one. "Never heard of it."
"Yeah, you have, you fool," said another. "It's one of the Duke of Ensley's places."
Except he'd said Duke as though it was pronounced like book, which snagged up Jack's attention.
"Oi," said a third man, waving a hand Jack's way. "Did you not hear my question? Are you a gentleman like the Duke?"
Jack grinned.
"Not on my very worst day."
"That being the case, we'll tell you. You need to stay on this road, south, near all the way to Littlehampton," the second man said. "You won't miss the place. It's a big pile of stone."
Jack reached into his pocket and pulled out some coins.
"Thank you," he said as he tossed them to the men. "The next one's on me."
And on he rode, near south to Littlehampton, wherever the hell that was. The sun had been down long enough for the stars to begin to show when Bremerton's knock sounded at the bedroom door. "Come in," Caroline called from her seat at the dressing table. She turned and watched as Bremerton stepped inside.
"Where's your maid?" he asked.
"You told me to have her sleep in her room, so that's where she is," Caroline replied before facing the mirror.
She picked up a diamond earring and held it as though deciding how it would look on her. As she returned it to the dressing table's surface, she watched the Englishman walk a circle of the bedroom. When he was done, he stopped behind her and put both hands on her shoulders. For the first time, she managed not to shiver at his touch.
"It seems my stableman and maid have come up missing. Might you know anything about that?" he asked.
"No."
"Interesting. I was certain you would. Mrs. Parker told me it happened just before dinner. You'd been around the house all day, and you have a way of stirring things up."
He paused.
"Now Mrs. Parker and the waiter seem to have disappeared, too. Good help is so hard to find."
Caroline looked away from the mean curve to a smile.
"I am sorry to hear that."
He let his hands slip from her shoulders and bent forward to give a negligent flick at one of the rings that sat in the jewelry she'd been sorting.
"So many riches and not enough days in a life to show it off."
She let her gaze meet his in the mirror.
"Should I interpret that as a threat?"
"No, I was merely making a comment on your wealth."
He turned and walked away. Caroline relaxed marginally.
"So you speak French and interpret threats," Bremerton said. "And I would guess by my missing servants that you now know I once had an interest in things French."
"If you're referring to your late wife, yes."
"I'm sure you have questions," he said as he settled onto the cowhide couch. "Do ask."
"I've learned that you prefer it when I don't."
"As you wish. Then I'll ask again, where's your maid? I know she's not in her room."
"Then maybe she's in the kitchen," she replied, praying that Annie was now outside with their transportation.
He rose.
"I am not fond of liars."
"And I'm not fond of having you in my room," she said in a calm voice. "You've been here, you've checked on my welfare, and now I'm asking you to leave."
"And if I choose to stay, I think at the very least I deserve to see you as the Irishman has."
Caroline reached into the jewel case as though looking for another piece, but pulled out her gun. She pushed away from the dressing table, turned, and raised it at him.
"My brother Eddie taught me how to shoot and spit," she said. "Of the two skills, I prefer shooting."
"Then put it down.
There's no need for drama, Bremerton said in a smooth voice that Caroline was sure had swayed others, but not her.
You can loom and threaten, but if I pull this little gun, you call me dramatic. That's hardly sporting of you, she said.
She paused a moment, trying to decide if that was really the sound of hooves on stone she was hearing outside. She thought it might be. Caroline stood and advanced a step on Bremerton, who held his ground in the middle of the room.
Eddie taught me to always leave the chamber at the firing pin empty so there wouldn't be any nasty accidents if I dropped the gun. But I was feeling a little distracted when I loaded this tonight. And do you know what silly thing I did? No? She asked in the face of Bremerton's continuing silence. I loaded all 6 chambers. Let's hope I don't drop the gun. But just in case, I'm going to suggest that you stay well back. We both know about those tragic accidents, don't we, my lord?
You have lost your mind.
Maybe, she said cheerfully. And since I have, I'm going to make some demands. Until Annie arrives with our horse, you are to stay where I can see you and with your hands in the air.
What?
As they say in the Wild West of my country, reach for the sky.
She narrowed her gaze, and I do mean now. Bremerton raised his hands.
Thank you.
A commotion sounded from someplace downstairs. Annie had to be back. But then Caroline heard a male voice calling her name. She laughed with joy.
We have a guest, she said to Bremerton. It's the love of my life.
He didn't appear very impressed.
Upstairs, Jack, and grab a candle, she called. You're going to want some light.
Jack bounded up the stairs 2 at a time, and the candle he'd just lit smoked and flickered as the air pushed past it.
Which room are you in? He called.
Keep coming this way.
He was close enough that he could see light spilling from a room on his right. Jack stepped in and froze.
Hello, Jack, Caroline said, both her eyes and a gun trained on his lordship.
It doesn't look as though you needed a rescuer, he said conversationally.
Appearances can be deceiving. I was actually a little vague on this part of the plan. I'd been expecting Annie, but as you can see, she isn't here. And sooner or later, I was going to have to either shoot this man or run.
Jack grinned.
I vote for shoot him.
My decision was leaning in that direction, she replied.
For what it's worth, your plan would have worked, more or less. I passed Annie on the lane a way back.
He paused.
Did you know that goats can pull a cart?
She laughed.
She bartered sapphires for goats?
And a very small cart.
He circled Bremerton.
How do you feel about violence? Jack asked Caroline.
I seldom condone it.
Ah, too bad.
He moved directly in front of Bremerton and was amused to see Caroline reposition herself so there was nothing between her and her potential target.
Then we'll do it like this. I'm giving you one shot at me, he said to Bremerton. Totally free.
Jack, Caroline said in a hesitant voice.
Jack grinned at the Englishman.
Take it, you git.
Bremerton swung, but Jack ducked.
Missed, he said right before he broke the bastard's nose.
Jack and Caroline watched as the Englishman crumpled.
Do you have anything I can tie him up with? Jack asked.
She stopped aiming at Bremerton long enough to gather a fistful of fat strings from a trunk.
Corset lacings, she said.
While Jack trussed up the Englishman, Caroline aimed her gun.
I don't think he's getting up, Jack pointed out.
I'm just being careful, she said. And about the violence, I said I seldom condone it. For him, I would have made an exception. You didn't need to let him swing first.
Satisfied with his knotwork, Jack stood.
I knew he couldn't hit me. Now, how about if you put down that gun so I can propose?
Her eyes grew wide. She carefully placed the gun on a curio shelf. Jack walked around Bremerton, who was beginning to stir, and took a knee in front of Caroline.
Caroline, you are my love, my laughter, and the most frustrating woman I'll ever meet. Would you please do me the honor of being my wife?
Her eyes were misty, but her smile was bright when she said,
Jack Culhane, what took you so long?
Epilogue. England was well behind them when the Maxwell women, Bernard and Jack, sat down to dinner on the Conqueror 2 days later.
I have an announcement to make, Caroline said to her parents once the champagne was poured. My husband list is down to one name, and that is Jax. We plan to marry this winter, and there will not be a single cherub anywhere in the church. We very much want all of you there, though. Her father's face had turned ruddy with emotion.
I've been waiting years to walk you down the aisle, Pumpkin.
Bernard, Mama said, before Papa started laughing.
I know, I can't call her Pumpkin.
Mama sighed.
I had so hoped for a duchess in the family, but Bremerton is well off the list.
Before they had left, Papa had sent a packet to the Duke of Ensley with all the information that Caroline and Jack had uncovered on Bremerton. If he ever did inherit, he was likely to be a duke behind prison bars.
But you know, Mama said, there are so many nice English gentlemen, and Helen and Amelia have yet to marry.
Oh, no, Helen said. Don't even begin looking at me like that. I have no desire to live in England.
France, then, or Italy, Mama exclaimed. You'll make the most beautiful bride.
Jack placed his hand over Caroline's where it sat on the tabletop. They smiled at each other. Caroline had found the place she most wanted to be, and that was with Jack. They would have the perfect life and the perfect wedding, complete with chocolate cake.
We hope you've enjoyed The Husband List, a Macmillan audio production from St. Martin's Press. Text copyright 2012 by The Gus Group, LLC. Production copyright 2012 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.